Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts, Dana Osman, here with my friend Chavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Yud Aleph, page 11. Well, I'm going to start with a new Mishnah here that's discussing a case of how something can have a kinyan made to it by a chatzer, by a courtyard. Ra'o tan ratzin achar metzia. If somebody sees people running after a metzia, after some type of ownerless object that's in his field, achar tzvi shavor, or after a deer that's in his field, achar goes alot shelo parchu, or young pigeons that cannot fly, v'amar zachta li sadi, and he says, my field has acquired it for me, zachta lo, it has acquired it for him. Hayat zvi ratz kedarko, but if the deer was running normally, o shahayu goes alot mifrichin, or the young pigeons were flying, v'amar zachta li sadi, and he says, my field has acquired it for me, lo amar klum. It's as if he said nothing. The reason for that being is that the deer or the birds are not going to stay in his field, so he can't really acquire it. So the Gemara is going to begin by quoting a statement of Rav Yehuda in the name of Shmuel that basically, you know, gives a major qualification to this Mishnah, this idea that your field can actually serve as a way of making a kinyan, of making an acquisition. I'm a Rav Yehuda, I'm a Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, V'hu shomei b'tzad sadehu. It has to be that the owner is standing on the side of his field for this to work. Now, first, the Gemara will object to this. V'tiknu le'sadehu, right? Can his field just acquire it for him, even if he's not there? Dama Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, because Rabbi Yossi said, the son of Rabbi Chanina, chatzer shel dam konelo shelo midato. A courtyard of a person acquires an object for him without his knowledge. Now, obviously, this needs to be a case where the owner isn't standing next to his field, because if you are next to your field, you should be aware of what's going on your field. So that's what it needs to mean by shalomi dato. So the Gemara answers, hani mili b'chatzer hamishtameret. So this ruling of Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Chanina, only applies with a guarded courtyard, right? So the courtyard can acquire an object for a person, as long as it, without them knowing that it's there, as long as it's a guarded courtyard. Aval chatzer she'ena mishtamer, but if it's a courtyard that's not guarded, iomed b'tzad sadehu in, the owner either has to be on the side of the courtyard in order for him, for it to acquire. Ilo, but if he's not standing there, then it doesn't make an acquisition. Now the Gemara is going to support this by bringing a very interesting Mishnah. Umat Meira, from where do you say this? To Chatzar Sheina Mishtamerid, that a courtyard that is not guarded, Iomade Bitsad Sadehu In, that if the owner stands on the side of the field, yes, he makes an acquisition, Ilolo, but if not, not. And so here's the brisa that they bring. Ditanya, was taught in a brisa. Haya Omade Ba'ir, an owner leaves his field and he's in the city. Va'omer Yerdea Nisha Omer Sheyeshli, Basadeh Paulim Shechachu. And he says, I know that the workers forgot a sheaf that I had in the field. Lo yehe shechacha. Then it can't become shechacha. So remember, shechacha is found in Devarim, chapter 24, verse 19. This is the pasuk they're going to quote later on, that basically says that if you forgot to harvest something, you forgot a sheaf, you can't go back and get it. So here the case is the owner's not in his field. And he basically says, I know they forgot this sheaf, but it's not shechacha because I know that it's there. And they said that that's valid and doesn't make it shechacha. Okay, yachol lo yehe shechacha. So it would be possible to think that it does not become shechacha, even if the owner forgets. Talmud lomar, because the Torah says in this pasuk in Devarim, v'shachachta omer basada. The Torah teaches, and you forgot a sheaf in the field. Basada v'shachachta. It implies that you have to forget the sheaf while you're in the field. V'lo ba'ir, and not when you're in the city. So the reason why it's not shechacha is because he's in the city. So now the Gemara wants to understand this brisa a little bit. Hagufakasha. So the brisa is self-contradictory. Amart yachol lo yehesh shechacha. First you said it would be possible to think that it does not become shechacha if he's in the city, not in the field. Alma habe shechacha. So we see that a sheep becomes shechacha when the owner forgets it after arriving in the city, right? As if he, when he gets to the city, it can be shechacha. But if he says deliberately, I know that this sheep maybe was forgotten, but I'm not making a shechacha, then it's okay. But then the brisa goes on to explain, when you're in the field and you forgot the sheaf, right? Then it's shechacha, but not when you're in the city. So we see there's no way it could have become shechacha. So why do you need to teach us this special halacha that he has to make this declaration while he's in the city? Elalav hachikama. Rather, this is what the brisa really means. Basadeh, while the owner is still in the field, shechuch mikaro havi shechacha. If the sheaf is forgotten initially by the owner, it automatically becomes shechacha. Zachor levasuf shechuch ein shechacha. But if initially it was remembered by the owner and then eventually forgotten, right, it is not shechacha. My time, what's the reason that it's, that sheaf doesn't become shechacha in this case? Dekeven dekai gaba habe le chatzero vizachta le. Because since the owner is standing in the field, it serves as his courtyard and he acquires the sheaf. Aval ba'ir afilo zachor levasov shechuch habe shechacha. But the Bryce is telling us if the owner's already in the city when he makes his declaration, even if the sheaf was initially remembered by the owner and eventually forgotten, it becomes shechacha. My time, what's the reason, right? Delesle gabe delisle le. Because the owner is not in the field for to acquire the sheaf for him. So this interpretation of the brisa, we see from the brisa that an open field can acquire on behalf of the owner only when he's present there to actually guard it. So the Gemara from here is actually going to give another interpretation of the brisa, which kind of is going to refute the idea that an open property can acquire on behalf of its owner, whether or not he's there. Mimai, how do you know that this is what the brisa means? Dilma gezera katufi. Perhaps it's just a gezera of the Torah. De besade nahave shechacha. That when the owner's in the field, it's shechacha. Ubayir lo nahave shechacha. But when the owner's in the city, it doesn't become shechacha. So the Gemara answers, it's going to answer that basically it's impossible to say that shechacha only applies when someone's in his field. Amarkra, lo tashuv lekachto. Right? The pasuk says you shall not turn back to take it. Right? You can't go back to take the sheep that you forgot. Lerabot shechad ha'ir. So this words come to include if you forgot it and the owner's in the city. So the Gemara is going to object to this. Hamibay leila love. Right? That verse is needed to add a different prohibition in the commandment of shechacha, not to extend shechacha to the city. So the Gemara says, im kein neimakra lo tikachu. If so, the scripture meant only to add the prohibition to shechacha law. Let the verse say simply, do not take it. My lo tashuv, right? Why do you add, you shall not turn back? L'rabot shechacha ra'ir. It must mean to include the shechacha, right? So in other words, the Gemara first comes and says, okay, maybe it's just saying don't go back just to explain what the law is. But then the Gemara lands on and says, no, again, they're like, it's you didn't really need to say lo tashuv, so it must be there to actually, you know, to include the city. Gemara still doesn't like this. V'achte mi ba'ile l'kididnan. Right, but the verse is still needed to teach. This is what we learned, this following halacha from a Mishnah. Shelefanav ein shechacha, that which is in front of him is not shechacha. Shelacharav yesh shechacha, shehu beval tashuv. But what's behind him is shechacha because it falls under the prohibition of v'lo tashuv, which is in this pasuk in Devarim chapter 24, verse 19. Kol shehu bal tashuv shechacha, zehaklau, excuse me, this is the rule, right? Anything that's governed by the prohibition not to turn back is shechacha. Kol she'enu b'val tashuv eino shechacha. Anything that's not governed by the prohibition not to turn back is not shechacha. So the point is the pasuk is needed to be here to make this distinction between sheaves that he would have to turn back on and sheaves that he could still get without turning back. So now we don't need this to say that it you can't use this pasuk to say that it actually extends to the city. So the Gemara answers, Amar Ravashi, Amar Kra, Yehei. So the pasuk says, it shall be. L'rabot shechachat ha'ir. So this is how we learn that the owner, that it can be forgotten in a city. So now we have a different interpretation of the Mishnah, which seems to be different than what we first got. So the Gemara now is going to come and basically, you know, support something else, to bring something else to support Rav Yehuda's opinion. V'kein amar Ula. Ula said about our Mishnah, v'hu shomei b'tzad sadehu, right? That also, like Rav Yehuda, that it has to be the owner standing on the side of the field. V'chein amar Rabba bar Bar Chana, and Rabba bar Bar Chana also said, v'hu shomei b'tzad sadehu, also that the owner has to be on the side of the field. So I think what's happening here is that initially, right, the Gemara is trying to prove this from a brisa. They kind of land in the end that actually the brisa is talking about something different. It's really talking about the halachot, about whether you need to be in the city or not in the city. And then it actually finally says, no, even if you're in the city, it still can be shechacha. So in the end, the way that they prove that Rav Yehuda's interpretation is correct is they bring two other Amoraim and they basically say, well, other Amoraim sort of say this. So it has to be that this was sort of how everybody understood this Mishnah. And I think that's kind of interesting. They don't come out and like straightforwardly reject it, but at the end of the day, there isn't really a strong Tannaitic proof. And it's more just that we see a variety of different Amoraim accept it. So, you know, or give this same interpretation. And so that has to be interpretation. I think that's a little different than what we've seen before when we try to prove an Amora's opinion, you know, by using other Amoraim.
I think the question of the Amoraim is an interesting one, especially since we know that a good number of the Amoraim were living in Babel, in Babylonia, and that means that they weren't really, they weren't practicing so many of these land of Israel dependent mitzvot, right, commandments. And so therefore, when they come to talk about them, they're talking about them very practically, and yet it's not clear to me how many of them were living them practically, as we've discussed, meaning this is par for the course. I want to just note, rather than going through more inside of these, you know, these kinds of issues, I just want to note that the Gemara, like, delves in very seriously to pay attention to what happens if somebody's not at their courtyard, what happens if you do acquire the tithes by means of the courtyard, when does this kick in, when does this not kick in? And towards the end of this whole discussion, we have a statement by Rav Papa. Rav Papa Amara, dat acheret makneo tan shani. So the case, right, was, which I'm not reading inside, is Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva are both acquiring tithes, one maser rishon and one maser ani, by means of the courtyard. And so Rav Papa's point is, that's not going to mess with Ula's opinion about whether you need to have somebody there to acquire it. Why? Since those tithes were not ownerless items to begin with, right? Rather, Rabbi Gamliel is transferring their ownership to Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva. Meaning it's an intent in a very specific kind of way, and there was never any found object. So then that makes a difference to the degree that the recipients don't have to stand there next to the courtyard to be able to acquire it. I'm going to wager, and I know that the commentaries talk about this, that part of that is a matter of whether, you know, when it's coming from a clear owner, that's a really different kind of situation than encountering something that's hefker or ownerless, and now you have to take possession of it in a more active way. So, the Gemara says, how do we know this? Where do we see this distinction? Omana tamer ditnan ra'a otan matzin achar matziah. You saw, you know, from that mission, if you saw people running after a found object, the Amar of Yirmia, Amar of Yochanan, v'hu sherat achrehen umigian, so then, right, somebody's going to run after him, he's going to catch them, reach them, obay Rabbi Yirmia, mamatana haich, meaning, so then Rabbi Yirmia is going to have this dilemma, right, can you acquire animals that were given to you as a gift under these conditions where you're then chasing them? Kibla mine Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, af al pi sherat achrehen ve'ein migian. The fact that you ran after them, even if you don't catch them, my tama lav mishum didat acheret makna oto shani. So it's not because we say a different mind functioned to be the intent to transfer ownership, right? Rather, we're saying that you could acquire those animals. Even if you would not be able to run after them and catch them, you could still work it out that there's some kind of formal act of acquisition that will bring them to your property. Okay. Now, and this is the part that interests me, but it's a very, very small piece at the end of the Gemara, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. Amar le Rav Simi le Rav Papa. Rav Shimi to Rav Papa. What does he say? Hare get. He's this case of a get, of a divorce. Didat achert makneota. Another mind is transferring ownership. Isn't that the husband who's giving the wife back her rights to ownership? Vamar ula vahusho omedit betzad beita o betzad chetzera. Shani get de ite bal karcha. Right, so what happens? He says, well, we're talking about a bill of divorce where the husband is transferring the ownership to the wife, and Ula says that when you throw that bill of divorce into the house or into the courtyard, right, then the courtyard or the house is going to be what acquires it. But then the question is, does that really count as a valid divorce? If she's Like, or does it only count if she's standing there? Rav Papa answers, right? No, a bill of divorce is different because, and this, of course, is something we know, de'ite ba'al karcha, the man, the husband can give the wife a bill of divorce against her will. So then she doesn't have to be there to demonstrate that it's her will to acquire it. Okay, but Rav Shesha doesn't like this. Matifla Rav Shesha, b'rei de Rav Idi, v'lav kal v'chomer hu. Isn't this going to be a kal v'chomer? Can't you learn from this a logical inference? Uma get de'ite ba'al karcha, i'ya omedet b'tzad beitao v'tzad chatzera'a, in ilolo, right? Shouldn't it be the case that if we're talking about a divorce, which is valid, even if it's not according to her will, then standing, if she's standing next to her house, next to her courtyard, right? And then, you know, she doesn't, it's the same kind of issue, but she's there present. Can she actually acquire it willingly? Is that such a thing here? Or are we going to say, you know, I'm sorry for getting jumbled. The question is, does she have to be there for the acquisition to take place? Right, so it says, "Butzad chatzera in ilo lo matana dimidata lo kol shekin." And so all the more so, right, if it's a gift that you can only accept, you know, with goodwill, let's say, right, that's only going to work in the event that the recipient is there to demonstrate that they really want this gift. Okay, with that, we're going to stop for the day. Obviously, this all continues. We're very much like in the midst, in the weeds of this discussion, and we'll pick it up. That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcast. Come talk to us on our Facebook page and tell us what you think of this DAF. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. And until tomorrow, go and learn.